Okay, we're a couple of minutes past the hour, and I think we will kick off. So, welcome, and thank you for joining another exciting installment in our webinar series. Today, we're talking data security, and specifically how Purview can help you secure your data. Alongside availability of systems, data is by far our most important concern. Whether that's against insider threat or external attackers, it is hugely important that we protect our data from those threats. So we're going to be taking you from zero to Purview Hero today. And I don't want to get lost in the mess that is Microsoft licensing. I'm sure Sam can help you with that if needed. And I think he's going to touch upon some of it, but not in too much detail. I think we could spend an entire webinar talking about the pitfalls of Microsoft licensing. But I can't imagine many, if any of you guys have joined today, aren't using E3 Microsoft services in any shape or form. And many have probably already invested in E5, which gives you many of the data security capabilities that you need. So whether you're a current E5 customer considering it or have Purview deployed, this is very much the webinar for you. So we're going to go through helping understand what Purview can deliver, why use it, the important features and where you should start, and how you can enhance what you've got. So let's move on to who's going to be joining me today and helping us cover this. So as much as I would back myself in most topics, today we need a true Microsoft expert. So let me introduce Sam Lambert. Sam is our seasoned cloud security architect and resident Microsoft security expert. He has a wealth of experience, primarily in banking and finance sectors, leading the deployment of Microsoft E5 solutions and helping organizations understand and importantly avoid some of the pitfalls and move them towards best practice. And although Sam does have all the Microsoft certs, I'd probably say what Sam doesn't have isn't worth having. He's not just a paper expert and has thorough hands-on experience when it comes to delivering Microsoft security capabilities. So welcome, Sam.
Thank you, Rich.
So we'll just move on to the agenda. So we're going to cover, why Purview, why we're talking about it, why is it important. I hinted on some of those items, that it is included in many licenses, but also that it is very capable. We're going to talk about where to start, particularly around Compliance Manager. The overview of the core Microsoft Purview data governance features. How to get the most of the DSPM for your for AI Hub. Navigating the licenses, as I said, which is a minefield, and how can you get licensed and what elements do you need to use for Purview to cover everything else off? And then we're going to dive into the Q&A. So there's a Q&A function as part of Zoom. Please click that Q&A button and ask questions throughout. And at the very end of the webinar, we'll dive down into those and answer them for you. So one last thing before I forget is polls. We'll be running some polls throughout, so it's probably a good place to start with our very first poll. So if we could hit that, Lisa, thank you very much. So just get a sense of where we are, and particularly around Microsoft licensing. Which Microsoft 365 license tier are you currently using for compliance and security capabilities? So we'll just give a minute or so, or 40 seconds or so, just to get the answers. And really, we can see where we're all standing and where we are. And then that'll help us and help you guys plot to where we need to go. So I think that's time for everyone to click their favorite radio button there of the licenses they've got, Lisa. So let's have a quick look at the results. If you can just post those, please. There we go. So some interesting items there, Sam. Before I hand over to you, I think unsurprisingly, our two highest categories there are very much E3 and E5. One person's going to specify, hopefully in the chat, what that other is, and you can send it direct to myself and Sam if you don't want to share that overall. But we can see that that there's a good number on that Microsoft path. And as I say, I'd be surprised if anybody joining the call isn't already on that path. So Sam, I'll tell you what, I don't know if you want to take that from there, and if there's anything to, I think we'll probably cover off some of these elements as we go, and we can kick off.
Great stuff. Well, thank you, Rich. So I thought we'd begin. So why Microsoft Purview? Well, it brings together compliance, data governance, and insider risk management under a single umbrella, In short, it's a platform designed to provide unified visibility, control over your data, whether it be structured, unstructured, whether it's in Microsoft 365, whether it's in a multi-cloud environment, or even on-premise. And according to Gartner, by 2027, 70% of CISOs in larger organizations will adopt a consolidated approach to address both insider risk and data exfiltration use cases. And today we'll look at Microsoft Purview and see if it would fit the mold in this consolidated solution.
So do bear with us. I think it's I think it's important. I think there's a whole conversation about the rise of DSPM, which I'm hoping that we'll cover, and I know we'll cover at some points. And as I said at the very start, I think Gartner very much calling out there that it's important that we adopt that consolidated approach, that we can't be disjointed or segmented in our security capability. And that's really whether, and as I called out at the start, whether that's insider risk or external. And external risk is obviously that data exfiltration. Yes, we've got ransomware groups that are affecting the availability of our data. But as we all know, double extortion is now the name of the game, taking that data out of the organization to be able to extort us further and pull those levers. So Sam, I'll hand back over to you.
Yeah, thanks for taking over there for me. As I was saying, this quote really highlights the direction of travel of the way in which the industry is going. And today we'll look at Microsoft Purview and how it might fit this mold and offer you this consolidated solution. So first, let's look at conversely how perhaps fragmented solutions can often lead to worse security outcomes. This can be anything from duplication of data, because clearly you'll be storing in multiple different cloud platforms, potentially with different cloud providers, and they can be in different regions or even different countries. You may run into inconsistencies with data classification. For example, if you're using one classification within your insider risk management platform and another for your DLP solution, these can conflict and sometimes be inconsistent. From a cost management perspective, you'll need to scale up your team on two sets of solutions, and that can be a hidden cost in itself. There's longer deployment timelines, because often the integration points aren't as seamless. And in conclusion, it was more common in the past for security and data protection to be managed in silos, but modern threats transcend these boundaries, which is why we need to look for a unified solution such as Microsoft Purview. Now, I thought we would begin out the features, starting with Compliance Manager, because this is a good place to start. It's a tool in Purview that provides a centralized way for you to assess and manage your compliance across your entire environment. This is available for you at purview.microsoft.com. That's how you will get to the portal, and then you can select solutions. And if you go to Compliance Manager, you'll be able to load up your current compliance score. And what makes it especially useful is that it automatically integrates recommendations from multiple data points, including Microsoft Secure Score. So you get actionable insights that bridge the gap between security and compliance. It essentially helps you identify gaps, implement controls, and monitor progress over time, which can be aligned to your industry standards and regulatory frameworks. If we were to take a look now at the improvement actions, one of the challenges clients face when they first see this is the sheer volume of recommendations. So if you look at the top right-hand corner here, you can see that it's 489 items showing, and that could be overwhelming at first, and you might be wondering just where to begin. And for that, I remind you of the idiom, how do you eat an elephant? And of course, it's one bite at a time. And that is the approach I would recommend you take. You've got to work on this iteratively. So one of the tips that we'd have is to start by using the filters. We might first search for protect information under categories, as an example. But then we might also make that a bit more granular and then filter by solution. So in this case, information protection. And as you can see in the top right-hand corner, those recommendations have now reduced down to 15 items. And that might be a good first initiative that you can work with, which is a more tenable workload or mini project that you can stand up. Once you've understood your scope, the next recommendation I would have would be to start assigning owners to these, because you want someone to be accountable and responsible for actually doing the implementation. So inside Compliance Manager, it actually gives you this ability to assign owners within the platform. You can then set the implementation status. So for example, there may be items in here that you that you've got compensating controls for, or it's a third-party product which is doing the job or passing the control, which Microsoft cannot see. It doesn't have visibility into any kind of configuration. So you might need to feed it some context in that and classify it as, for example, alternative implementations planned. On the other hand, you might know that it's something you want to do, but it's on the roadmap and you might want to classify it as planned so that you can start to see the wood for the trees and really get some focus around the key initiatives that you really need to start working on in the short term. There's also a tab for test and verification. So in some sense, Microsoft Compliance Manager will be able to automatically audit if you've passed a control, if it's a configuration change. In other scenarios, though, it will not be able to see those configuration changes. And that's where you might need to incorporate some kind of test and verification process into your standard operating model. And it's always a good idea to perhaps introduce some oversight committee or in oversight personnel so that the person doing the testing and verification is not the same person as doing the implementation. Otherwise, they're marking their own homework. And you can add notes in here. So I recommend using your existing ticketing system. It's a good way to seamlessly introduce this into your existing operating model. And that way you've got full, full audit log and accountability of what's going on. Based on specific actions. You can also use the out-of-the-box frameworks or standards to create ready-made assessments based on your company's regulatory requirements. And you can use the compliance platform to benchmark, say, for example, against PCI DSS 4 version 4, or you could use it against NIST. And this can benchmark your past and failed controls against not just your 365 tenant, but also your Azure tenant also. Now we're going to spend some time just talking about some of the core features, because when it comes to data security, we need to take a holistic approach. For example, we need to use information protection, data loss prevention, and insider risk management solutions with adaptive protection layered over the top in order to get this holistic approach. And if you're not sure about what most of these workloads do, don't worry. We're going to do a bit of a deeper dive into each of them now. So starting with information protection, this is the likes of using sensitivity labels, where whether that be enforcing a user to set one or auto-applying through auto-labeling. And you can use that in conjunction with sensitive information types. So sensitive information types, or SITs, as they're known in Microsoft, are pattern-based classifiers. So they can detect patterns. For example, a 16-digit credit card number is one of the out-of-the-box SITs, and you can use that to ascertain confidence levels based on other factors. For example, if the security code is in a certain proximity of those 16-digit card numbers, then you might have a high confidence that this is in fact a credit card, and then you can then build DLP policies on the back of this. You might also use watermarks. So this is or headers and footers, and this is another good way to overtly classify on the document exactly what the classification is. Particularly useful if you're doing a lot of exporting to PDF, and because that means it's printed on the document, and that's going to retain even after it leaves the organization. You might also want to restrict employees so that it's internal only. So for example, you might have a classification that is supposed to be internal only and it's not for any externals, and that's where we can use encryption. So we can enforce encryption, so perhaps they have to be signed in using their Entra login, for example, before they can even open a document. And last but not least, under the information protection banner, you might start to use policy tips. So if we think of the scenario using credit cards, using 16-digit card numbers, rather than auto-classify it, we might decide just to give the user a nudge and encourage them to set the label based on the criteria that's matching. So in this instance, we think it's a credit card number. Why don't you set this as confidential, as an example? And that might be a happy medium. It might be something to introduce as a first phase, so you're not introducing too much friction into those workflows before going out to full auto labeling scenarios. Now to talk about data loss prevention. This is in a very important control coupled with information protection, because once you've classified your data correctly, it becomes a lot easier then to build DLP rules in relation to that classification. So some of the features that you might look to use is simulation mode. So this will be an isolated experience to run and assess policies. This will give you a summary dashboard that gives you visibility and the impact of policies across different locations and shows what were matched before actually taking any action. So it's not going to block, it's more of an audit mode, so you can gauge the impact before actually progressing to the next steps, which might be block with override. And you can also use the Data Explorer. As you can see on the screen here, we can start to audit activity, and that might be moving files to a USB share to a USB device. It might be uploading to a cloud storage device, and this can all be utilized within the Purview portal. And the other actions to consider is the block with override. So once you've got an understanding of what the policy might do, you might then graduate to block with override, which would allow users to override the policy once they've provided just business justification. And that might be a good idea if you're not confident in what friction it's going to introduce into your workflows. So, for example, you might expect some false positives, and you might not want to slow down that workflow. So therefore, you might want to allow them to override it in this scenario. And then finally, you can move to block mode, which is of course the most secure. If we look at the adage versus usage versus security, then that's going to be right. That's going to be the most securest option and one that we would recommend and like you to get to. Okay, now just another thing to be aware of is there is to get the most out of the DLP capabilities. We would encourage you to use Defender for DLP. So within Defender for Endpoint, there's a DLP capability which you can onboard devices with, and that will allow you to use a lot of the richer features in terms of perhaps, for example, being able to intercept activity on managed devices. And you can use this in conjunction with the Purview browser extension. So the Purview browser extension support on Chrome and Firefox. There's not one for Edge because it's natively built into Edge. And I will talk more about that in the coming slides. So I'll touch on that when we discuss AI and the different possibilities of implementing that. And to bring it all together, you can of course have this natively integrate with your Defender XDR. So you can view your DLP alerts within your Defender for Endpoint portal. In this example, I've added some source code to a document and then named it sales memo in an effort to conceal the true nature of the document, but in actual fact, it's managed to detect it successfully. In this example, I'm using what's called a trainable classifier. So, a trainable classifier is a tool that you can use in Purview to train and recognize various types of data. So, you get 60 pre-trained trainable classifiers, and that this is an E5 feature. So, I noticed there was, I think, around 40% of the audience are using E5. So, this is ready for you to use today. And in essence, what this can do is you can train you. It's pre, you can have these pre-built ones like source code. So there's lots of different coding languages that will understand and detect automatically. But of course, you can create your own using custom detection, so custom trainable classifiers. So as a classic example, you might have an NDA which is following a very specific template. That might be a good candidate to train up with your trainable classifiers. And then on the back of that, you can build a very stringent DLP rule so that perhaps NDAs can't be uploaded to the cloud, as an example. Okay, so moving on now to insider risk, we can see here that there's such things as event triggers. So these are specific actions or behaviors that, when detected, initiate evaluation of a user's risk profile and potentially lead to an alert. And we will use these in conjunction with policy indicators. So policy indicators are where we can set specific thresholds based on activity. As you can see in this screenshot, there's an activity that is above the usual activity for the day, for a user's activity for the day. So here we can see machine learning at work as it establishes a baseline for the user's standard behavior in terms of activity. And we can all, and this can be, if this is boosted, say it deviates from that threshold, then it may trigger an alert. There's also a concept of what's called peer group norms, which can be defined based on the organizational hierarchy. So, for example, in Microsoft Entra, you've got attributes for job title and department that live in a user's profile. Well, Purview can make use of those to understand that hierarchy and perhaps understand peer group norms. And it can also take data from shared resources. So, for example, if peers are consistently sharing access to particular SharePoint files, for example, then it may establish they are part of a peer group. Now, this is relevant because the type of behavior that you will see from your IT department is going to be typically different to the one in your finance department. For example, your IT department may routinely be running PowerShell scripts, whereas people in finance department might not even know what PowerShell is. So these are good features to start to utilize. Okay, now moving on, just so that you can see a visual representation of what the insider risk management platform looks like. This is an example of the risk management of insider risk management, where you can use visual activities on an interactive chart to help digest huge volumes of data and signals related to a case. And these investigations can cover across digital landscapes with signals from third-party applications, as well as including other cloud platforms. So, for example, you could connect up an S3 bucket in AWS with Azure, using Azure Purview, and start collecting that audit and telemetry data that is available to the resource. So where to begin? Well, going back to the advice at the beginning of the webinar would be to start with Compliance Manager, applying those filters. So you might start to look at, let's say, DLP. Let's filter by DLP recommendations. And then if we were to start looking at that, Microsoft provides a description of how to implement. And inside there, it will provide links. So my suggestion would be to start with each of these recommendations. And if it's in a project, create work streams and deliverables on the back of this. So moving on now to adaptive protection. So adaptive protection is when a user's risk is elevated based on the sequence of activities. So rather than have a blanket DLP policy, let's say that blocks clipboard and a sensitive document, you may only choose to do that once the user's risk is elevated to a particular level. So you may also choose to auto-elevate based on criteria, for example, if they're a lever. So in Purview, there is a HR connector which plugs into your HR system, and it can actually pull the lever date from your HR system and start using that data for added context. And why is that relevant? Well, because they pose a higher risk. Unfortunately, some users want to take company artifacts with them on their way out. So it might be an acceptable trade-off if they're a lever to start having more stringent DLP rules. And now we'll talk about the DSPM for AI Hub and how to get the most of it. So that stands for Data Security Posture Management for AI. And this is a component in Microsoft Purview that helps organizations discover, secure, and manage sensitive data used in AI applications. And to get the most out of it, I would recommend using the Defender for Endpoint DLP, which you will have to onboard your devices. Why? Because that's going to allow you to intercept that traffic on the managed devices. Couple that with the browser extension. Remember, it's native to Edge, so there's nothing to deploy in Edge. But if you are using other browsers, consider deploying those extensions. Inside Purview, you can also blacklist browsers. So it is a good idea to decide on your preferred supported browsers so that you can funnel all of the internet traffic activity through those browsers and not allow any security gap, any coverage gaps. So there's no point spending all this investment on these DLP controls and then leave an open goal for someone to go and download, say, a browser that doesn't support your preventative controls and you haven't got the visibility. So these are considerations that you should be factoring into your DLP strategy. And actually, and then last but not least would be to enable the Microsoft Purview audit function. So this will allow you to track user and admin activities. So you'll get more granular data in terms of those activities, particularly if they're using Microsoft Copilot, for example. So where to begin? And if you've got your hand up and you want to say Compliance Manager for this, you would actually be wrong in this instance. That's far too logical, because Microsoft have not got a category yet for to filter by AI. But where a good place to start would be the DSPM AI Hub dashboard. And if you go to there is a section called Get Started. And as you can see on the screen here, it lists some setup tasks, including the activate Microsoft Purview button that I, sorry, a capability which I was just describing. And in many cases, these are nice and easy. You click a button and it enables it. So it is becoming a little bit more self-intuitive in the new portal, which is great. And this is a good starting point. Get those setup tasks set up and implemented. Once you've done that inside the DSPM hub, you've also got a section for recommendations. So then you might move on to recommendations and start looking at those based on your requirements and priorities. Word of warning on these ones, there is nice and easy buttons to create the policy, but I do advise you to be cautious on this because sometimes it can be a bit presumptuous and it'll create a policy safe for all users. So I do recommend to tread carefully with those buttons. I much prefer to create it from scratch so I can be more meticulous with the scope that you're creating. But it's certainly they certainly do exist, and from a convenience standpoint, they are very convenient. Okay, now moving on now to licensing. So when it comes to Microsoft licensing, as Rich mentioned at the beginning of the call, it can be complex, particularly not if you're not E5 or A5, because if you are, then it's pretty straightforward. You've probably got the feature with some nuances. For example, if you're plugging in Azure Purview, then you might and you're plugging in your cloud resources, you might have some compute costs to consider there. But if you're on any of our license tier, I would suggest looking at a license matrix like the one we can see on the screen. This is simply an excerpt. It's too big to possibly try and communicate in a single slide, but we will send the link over as part of this webinar. It's an official Microsoft link, and it's a good idea just to use these matrices to go along and figure out, which feature you are actually eligible to use, because you can see some of them. You'll see DLP for email and files, so you get that with E3 with no Teams. But if DLP for Teams chat, you don't get that with E3. So it can be very granular in terms of what's enabled as part of your licensing tier. So I suggest to take a look at that before you set off on an initiative, just to make sure that you have everything you need and you don't need to consider upgrading. And in some cases, you might need a consumer upgrading, and that's when it's worth doing a cost analysis, a benefit against that based on the capabilities and what you're looking to achieve. And just the last point on that is, I tend to work backwards. So then in terms of this, so if you've got a certain initiative and you see you need to do DLP, start with this is what I'm looking to achieve. And then cross-reference that against the capabilities to see if you're eligible, because it is a bit of a minefield if you're not on one of the enterprise grade tiers like E5. And yeah, with that, I think I don't know if we did the last poll and we want to take a look at the results now, or if we just move on to a Q&A, Rich.
Get myself off mute there. So there's our last poll, Sam. Sort of, there's
Yeah.
some insights to pull from that. Surprising numbers
Great stuff.
say none, and I believe this was multiple choice. And as we see, there's quite a build
Yeah.
up there. And I would say, based on everything you said there, Sam, with the exception of DSPM for AI, not enough people were clicking the compliance manager button, which is
Yeah.
where everything seems to start, from what we've talked through there. So we'll jump into, and actually, sorry, thank you very much for Sam. It was excellent as always. It's always a pleasure to work with you. I see that somebody has got their hands up to ask a question, which is Ben. So Ben, if you could drop that into the Q&A function, please, and then we will try and we'll answer. We've got some time. It's nice to have a panelist that keeps to the time limit, Sam. So another little gold star for you there. But we will jump down into some of the questions that were asked throughout the presentation. So I'll start, I'll do them in order they came in, I think. So the first question actually was around Compliance Manager. So can you specify which compliance standards Compliance Manager focuses on to help us achieve, demonstrate our compliance?
So there's lots of out of the box ones, so I couldn't possibly recite them. But what I would say is, if you go to purview.microsoft.com, and then if you go into Compliance Manager, there's a section called Assessment. So I know, there's going to be NIST. There's not ISO 27001. I can tell you, not 2022. I can tell you that because I've checked. But there is some ISO standards. There is some NIST ones. There's PCI. There's quite a lot. So I would probably say look at what framework you're looking to implement against, and then cross-reference that against the portal, and you'll soon have your answer of the ready-made compliance frameworks that are available.
Excellent. Thank you very much, sir. So the next one was, can you implement blocking policies selectively on users/user groups? And I get you actually, and there's probably another question of, should you? But
Yeah,
I'll let you answer
yeah,
the
yeah.
first.
Yeah, of course. So you absolutely can, and the way in which we often recommend is to start with a pilot group. So even after you've done your simulation mode, so you can understand at a large scale how that potentially could impact your business, it's sometimes a good idea just to create a pilot group. You can segment that against your security team, your IT team, or whoever you can invite. It's good to get a good diverse mix of departments into that pilot group so that you can see different variations of the way data flows. But yes, you can absolutely do it at a granular level. On a best practice level, you should look to use dynamic groups because that will dynamically change. So as an example, this is particularly useful if you've integrated with your HR system. So as many companies are starting to mature now and they've got that auto integration for the GML process, joiners, movers, leavers, what will happen is it pulls it from the HR, it pulls the data from the HR system to Entra. Now Entra is then going to populate that job title or department. And the best practice, actually, if you can do it at this level, is to apply it at the dynamic. If you apply those dynamic groups, so for example, you might have one for IT, and you might apply that to look at the department. So in essence, it's a KQL query that goes, look at this attribute in Entra that's, department equals IT, department equals finance. If you apply that group to the DLP policy, that's going to work best because as you joiners, movers, leavers process is taking place, if someone moves department, that's going to move with them and it's self-governing. So that's the best practice on groups.
Right, brilliant. And conveniently, I think you touched upon the next question, or to a certain extent, with the integration with HR. So it's, if Entra ID is being used to create peer groups, do you need to sanitize Entra first, i.e., job titles?
Yeah, so it would be a good idea. I wouldn't say it is a full on dependency, and you absolutely need to do that because you could. But if you are going to utilize that functionality, it's going to work best with cleansed data because it's going to have a more accurate understanding of what them peers are. But I wouldn't say it was a showstopper as such. You can also apply policies without factoring in that.
Okay, and so I suppose just following on from that, you're not saying that, the prerequisite is the integration with a HR system. It's, at
Yeah.
that point, you're kind of just trusting
Yeah.
the data that's
Yeah.
being put there by the IT teams as they stand up the identities.
Yes. Yeah. So if you haven't got that auto integration point, then often it isn't going to be, accurate data, and it will need cleanse because, people are not good at keeping up with manually updating job titles in AD or in Entra. So therefore in those scenarios they're going to be, it's going to be inaccurate. But what I would say is, I would say it's a very small component in the grand scheme of things in terms of DLP features, and you can just as easily target, static groups which you can create yourself, and then or dynamic groups where they are accurate.
Now, just quickly, I can see that we've got more questions coming in as we go. We've got time, so please, if you've got some questions for Sam, then please follow them. It could be questions for me, but I reckon Sam is the right one to be answering all of these. Just actually, there's a question around AI. So, can you apply policies to limit AI prompts?
Yes, you can. So it's one of the prerequisites will be to switch on that Microsoft audit because that actually is going to get you that user and admin data in terms of the prompts. So for example, if they're using Copilot, for example, those interactions are actually logged in Purview right down to what they actually send. Now you can then that can detect, potentially malicious behavior, abusive behavior. So you can build in DLP policies to say block that outright, and that can also even extend, past Copilot into, the ChatGPTs, etc. If you've got the right setup, so you're going to want to have the fully fledged DLP set of capabilities for that in terms of, DLP for endpoints. You want to have the Purview browser integrated, and you also just want to reduce that attack surface, if you like, by removing as many AI non-sanctioned apps as possible, so that you've got less controls to contend with.
Yeah, I'm going to put you on the spot actually, because I guess I've got my own follow-on question. to that. And obviously, you know, to think of my perspective, nothing can escape our Office 365 apps on mobile phones. But at the same time, I do have the Chat GPT app, where I can obviously type anything in there that you know, do the controls extend to mobile?
So with the right controls, so basically it would have to be on a managed device to get the full suite of it to be able to intercept that block scenario. For mobile, you would probably have to look at alternative controls. So for example, there's two technologies in Microsoft that come to mind. So one is Defender for cloud apps, so that they are good for your non-managed devices. So think of a personal device logging on to, I don't know, Jira or ChatGPT. The caveat there is, though, you would have to integrate that with your single sign-on, and it basically would act like a reverse proxy. So say they need to sign on with ChatGPT, they would be asked to be signing with their Entra credentials. That traffic is then flowed through Microsoft first, and only then you can intercept, you take some intersection, you intercept those actions and take some, say, blocked actions. And the other control that comes to mind would be MAM policies. So that's mobile application management policies, where, you know, we can you can put some more granular controls, like, you know, blocking clipboard and things like that. So from that standpoint, you might be to kind of prevent certain data getting in and out depending on your scenario. So it's a bit more of a challenge. It's not directly, you know, imply the DLP policy, because it's not going to be able to, say, you know, interact on your personal laptop unless you stand up those other features.
Yeah, no, dude. I suppose it sort of mentioned there's obviously other features. Obviously, you started with the quote from Gartner around our consolidated effort, but it's also, I think, important that you know, there isn't a single silver bullet. It's defense in depth, multiple solutions all working together to achieve that. So just moving on to the next question. Have you successfully implemented communications compliance for profanity, sexual harassment, etc., for any of your customers?
So we see this more common in the educational sphere. So, you know, that's a key control that they want. They obviously don't want students, you know, even putting profanities in their place of school. So it's, the answer is yes. We have, and for that, you know, one of the things for communications compliance is you need to switch it on prior. So what you find is, if you don't switch it on and then you try to do an investigation after the fact, actually you haven't opted into that data, because the Microsoft have a privacy by design philosophy, whereby you'll have to opt into certain things before it's actually collecting the information. So what I would say for that is, if you're planning on using it, you want to switch it on first, because if you then need to do an investigation, what you might find is actually you're lacking the right audit data.
Okay. So next question here, can you exclude automated emails from the mandatory classification?
So you can build your sensitive, you can what you could do with that is you can build sensitive information types based on any kind of custom criteria. So for example, you could recognize a certain signature, a certain sender, or, you know, so there's lots of flexibility and granularity which you can apply to you know, DLP rules, and we and as well as using sensitive information types in conjunction with that.
Brilliant. And last question, and obviously we've got probably got some time for some more questions if anybody else wants to chuck another question Sam's way. But the question is, so best practice to follow when implementing labels. We've recently deployed info protection for PII data in email, but we're expanding and SharePoint is next on the DLP migration path. But we would like to make use of labels as demonstrated in your presentation. So obviously, I'll let you give the answer to that, Sam, in a second. But obviously, just call out that, you know, Sam and the entire Microsoft team here, you know, can help with that. So please reach out to your account manager and, you know, can engage with Sam on a one-to-one basis.
Absolutely. The best practices. So we would start with know your data, which is one of the Microsoft tenets, to first start to look at your classification and you start to scope your containers, as Microsoft would call it. So that would be things in 365, from Exchange Online, Teams, as well as all your 365 documents. And what we would do is start with those exercises of know your data, trying to understand, where does this data sit on the estate, where is it stale? Because there's also actually, it's a broad topic purview, but there's also something called data retention labels, which are set different as sensitivity labels. And you can use that to start understanding where your stale data is, perhaps hasn't been modified for 5 years, and you should go to an archive or a workflow which is scheduled for deletion. And that's important as part of the data cleansing process, so you haven't, and the more data you've got, the bigger your attack surface. So I guess there's a couple of points there. We would start with know your data. We'd try to understand what your sensitive information types should look like. We'd look to build custom ones based on your company needs, and then we would start to put them in simulation mode in the first instance so that we're not creating too much friction into the business. And I guess just the last point on it is, if you've already, did you see you already did it for, is have you done it for SharePoint or SharePoint's next on the list?
SharePoint's next, yeah.
And it would just be, it would be a case of ensuring how do we implement that in a way that's going to complement your existing controls. So for example, you're going to come into potential conflicts, say that you move a SharePoint data that's one classification into an email or vice versa, and you have to reconcile what those rules are going to be before going to implement them.
Brilliant. So thank you very much. Your excellent presentation, excellent Q&A from yourself, Sam, there. Excellent. Sorry, just in the background trying to share there. Excellent Q&A, which I've got to obviously thank all of our attendees for firing those questions in that we can talk through. And the last thing for me to do, other than just thanking Sam and thanking everybody that attended, just to call out that our next webinar is coming up only tomorrow, actually, looking at understanding sort of web exposure and the hidden risks behind modern web breaches, and how to protect that client-side elements that I'll be running with our partner Reflectives, who are the one of the leading experts in that area. So please sign up. The QR code is there, and hopefully see you on the webinar tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Thanks, bye.